Reached item number 12, Open Public Meeting Act. This is a briefing. Our Assistant AG, Bill Freymeyer, is going to refresh our memory again of the requirements that we live under with respect to the Open Public Meetings Act.
Good morning, Commissioners. So I'm going to go pretty quick. I promised Commissioner Holzmiller I thought I could get done in 30 minutes, so it's...
Five after.
I got 30 minutes. So this year, the attorney, for the last number of years, the Attorney General and the State Auditor, who in their professional lives have been very big open government advocates, and they have been proposing legislation for the last number of years to require training or to provide training to local governments and state agencies, because of the Attorney General's office and because of the high interest in open government, have had pretty good training on open stuff. But the local governments have maybe not had as much training, because of litigation and the cost of litigation, it's become a bigger and bigger issue. So this past session, the legislature passed some amendments to the Open Public Meetings Act and the Public Records Act that now require for certain public records officials and, I think, executives, periodic training on the Public Records Act, and for all new board members coming into boards and commissions, training on the Open Public Meetings Act. Doesn't necessarily apply to you because you are not new coming in members. The Act also requires an update every 4 years. But because the Attorney General's office has created some training, I thought this was a good opportunity to provide that training. What I'm going to do is show a YouTube video that our Open Government AG, Nancy Creer, has produced that allows you to meet that training obligation if you're a new member. Covers you for 4 years. And then after that, it's about 18 minutes, I think. After that, I'd like you to look at Section 12 of your notebook. Okay. It's a PowerPoint that I'm not going to go through the whole thing, but I'd like to talk to just a couple of the slides and then talk about a couple proposal I have for you with the committee thing. So okay. Without further ado, let's go to the video. This is big picture training. It's the one you can access this on the Attorney General's Open Government site on the website. And without further ado, we'll take off.
This training video provides an overview of the Open Public Meetings Act for both the general public and for public agencies. It is intended to provide a greater understanding of the legal requirements.
Yes. Can everybody hear? Yep. Good.
The Open Public Meetings Act is a law passed by the people of the state of Washington in 1971 at the time of a nationwide effort to make government affairs more accessible and government more responsive. The purpose of the Act is to provide the public access to information concerning the conduct of state and local government. The law is based on the principle that open government is essential to a free society. The Act provides the people of our state the opportunity to witness the deliberations and the decisions of their government. State and local agencies, such as school boards, city and county councils, and state commissions must comply with the Open Public Meetings Act. Actions and deliberations of these governing bodies must be conducted openly. Meetings subject to the Act must be open to the public, gavel to gavel, unless a law permits a meeting or a part of the meeting to be closed. Thank you so much for watching, and I hope you find this training informative.
This training presentation is based on the Open Public Meetings Act. The OPMA is in our study 42.30. This training video contains 15 short segments. The Attorney General just discussed segment 1, the history, intent, and purpose of the Act. In the remaining segments, we will cover the scope of the OPMA, what is a governing body, what is a meeting, what is action, what is final action, travel and gathering, regular meetings, special meetings, executive sessions, public attendance and comment, minutes, liability, other laws, and additional resources. The Act has several clear requirements, and compliance with them is improved with training. Training can mean the difference between complying with the law and expensive litigation. The Act applies to governing bodies of multi-member public agencies, both state and local. Public agency includes A, any state board, commission, committee, department, educational institution, or other state agency which is created by or pursuant to statute other than the courts and the legislature, B, any county, city, school district, special purpose district, or other municipal corporation or political subdivision of the state of Washington, C, any sub-agency of a public agency which is created by or pursuant to statute, ordinance, or other legislative act, including but not limited to planning commissions, library or park boards, commissions and agencies, and D, any policy group whose membership includes representatives of publicly owned utilities formed by or pursuant to the Washington laws when meeting together or on behalf of participants who have contracted for the output of generating plants being planned or built by an operating agency. In some cases, an entity which is not an agency can still be subject to the Act when it is the functional equivalent of a public agency. This determination depends on whether it performs a government function, receives government funding, the extent of government involvement or regulation, and whether the entity was created by government. Examples of public agencies subject to the Act include city councils, county councils, school boards, fire district boards, and state commissions. Agencies governed by an individual, such as a single director, are not subject to the Act. Some activities of public agencies are not subject to the OPMA. They include certain licensing and permitting activities, quasi-judicial matters, matters governed by the Washington State Administrative Procedure Act, APA, and certain collective bargaining activities. All meetings of the governing body of a public agency shall be open and public, and all persons shall be permitted to attend any meeting of the governing body of a public agency, except as otherwise provided in the OPMA. A governing body is defined as the multi-member board, commission, committee, council, or other policy or rulemaking body of a public agency, or any committee thereof, when the committee acts on behalf of the governing body, conducts hearings, or takes testimony or public comment. Meeting means meetings at which action is taken. Physical presence of the members is not required. A meeting can occur by phone or, in some cases, by email. I will talk more about email exchanges later in this video. A meeting does not need to be titled meeting. The OPMA also applies to retreats, workshops, and study sessions. A meeting does not occur if there is not a quorum. Both actions and final actions are subject to the OPMA. Action means the transaction of the official business of a public agency by a governing body, including but not limited to receipt of public testimony, deliberations, discussions, considerations, reviews, evaluations, and final actions. Final action means a collective positive or negative decision, or an actual vote by a majority of the members of the governing body when sitting as a body or entity upon a motion, proposal, resolution, order, or ordinance. Final actions must occur in public. Secret ballots are not allowed. A majority of the members of the governing body may travel together or gather for purposes other than a regular meeting or a special meeting, so long as no action is taken. And remember, action includes discussion of agency business. This means a quorum of members can travel to a meeting together, or they can gather at a public or private event, such as a festival or social function, so long as they do not collectively discuss agency business or matters. Regular meetings are recurring meetings held in accordance with a periodic schedule by ordinance, resolution, bylaws, or other rule. State agencies file the notice of regular meetings each year with the Office of the Code Advisor. Special meetings are meetings that are not regular meetings, called by the presiding officer or a majority of the members. This means they are meetings not on a fixed schedule, such as on a day different than the regularly scheduled meetings. Certain notice requirements apply to special meetings. For example, 24-hour advance written notice must be provided to members of the governing body and must be provided to local newspapers, radio, TV stations that have a request on file, posted on the agency's website if the agency has a website, unless other exceptions apply for agencies with few staff, and prominently displayed at the main entrance and the meeting site. The notice must specify the time, place, and business to be transacted. There is an exception to the notice requirements for emergency special meetings. Those are meetings involving injury or damage to persons or property, or the likelihood of injury or damage, where time requirements make notice impractical and increase likelihood of injury or damage. Under the OPMA, an executive session is a part of a regular or special meeting that is closed to the public for the limited purposes listed in the OPMA. The grounds for holding an executive session are narrowly construed. The purpose of the executive session and the time it will end must be publicly announced before excluding the public, and the time can be extended by further announcement. Examples of purposes include certain real estate discussions, reviewing negotiations on publicly bid contracts under certain conditions, evaluating the qualifications of an applicant for public employment, and meeting with legal counsel regarding enforcement actions, litigation, or potential litigation. The OPMA provides a list of authorized executive session purposes at RCW 42.30.110. In addition, a public agency can have a closed meeting to discuss matters not subject to the OPMA, such as deliberating on a quasi-judicial matter. Other laws may provide additional procedures or authority for particular meetings or hearings, or for particular agencies. An agency must carefully follow the law when meeting in an executive or closed session. For example, when meeting in an executive session under the OPMA to discuss agency enforcement actions, litigation, or potential litigation, there are three requirements. First, legal counsel representing the agency must be present. Second, the purpose is to discuss an agency enforcement action, litigation, or potential litigation to which the agency, governing body, or a member acting in an official capacity is a party or is likely to become a party. And finally, public knowledge regarding the discussion is likely to result in an adverse legal or financial consequence to the agency. Remember, an agency can discuss only those matters in an executive session under the OPMA that it has told the public it will discuss. The members cannot talk about other topics in that executive session. As we discussed, all meetings of the governing body of a public agency shall be open and public, and all persons shall be permitted to attend any meeting of the governing body of a public agency, except as otherwise provided in the OPMA. An agency also cannot place conditions on attendance, such as requiring persons to register their names or fill out a questionnaire before attending. As noted, email or phone call discussions among members of a governing body can be a meeting under the OPMA, but the purpose of the OPMA is to permit the public to attend and observe agency meetings. So when the public is unable to attend email or phone call discussions that are meetings under the OPMA, the Act has been violated. For example, It is generally agreed that the members can meet via a teleconference call so long as, one, any public notice procedures are satisfied, and two, an agency sets up a process for the public to attend, such as having a speakerphone available at the agency's official meeting location so the public can hear the discussion. In contrast, since an email exchange among a quorum of members of a governing body is not open to the public, such an exchange in which action takes place is a meeting that would violate the OPMA. And remember again, action is broadly defined. Those email exchanges do not comply with public notice and attendance requirements for regular or special meetings. The OPMA does not include a requirement that public agencies allow public comment. Nevertheless, many public agencies do permit some public comment period at a meeting, such as at the beginning of a meeting. Agencies can put reasonable procedures in place to allow for public comment. And the OPMA has procedures for dealing with disruptions when the orderly conduct of the meeting is unfeasible. The OPMA is in RCW 42.30. A different law describes meeting minutes. That law is at RCW 42.32.030, and it says, the minutes of all regular and special meetings, except executive sessions of such boards, commissions, agencies, or authorities, shall be promptly recorded, and such records shall be open to public inspection. That law does not require any specific format for minutes. That law also does not require an audio or video recording of a meeting, although many agencies make such recordings. We have advised that the minutes should, at a minimum, recite the significant actions of the agency. Violations of the OPMA can result in a lawsuit against an agency and its members. The court can impose a $100 civil penalty as personal liability against each member who knowingly violates the OPMA. The court can declare any action taken at a meeting not held in compliance with the OPMA null and void. And a court will award costs and attorney's fees to a successful party seeking a remedy under the OPMA. To recap, this presentation covers the highlights of the Open Public Meetings Act. Public agencies may be subject to other laws governing other particular meeting or hearing procedures or governing particular agencies. And the laws concerning agency meetings and hearings can also be amended from time to time. Therefore, agencies are cautioned to be mindful of all the current laws concerning their meeting and hearing procedures. For example, as of the date of this video, the 2014 legislature passed a new law amending the OPMA. That act will require regular meeting agendas to be placed online 24 hours before the meeting's start time, with certain limited exceptions. If the governor signs Substitute House Bill 2105, it will become effective June 12, 2014.
Thanks for participating in the Attorney General's Open Government Training. For more information, there are resources available for agencies to receive training and technical assistance for compliance with the Open Public Meetings Act. An official should first consult with its agency's counsel for routine assistance and for training. Additional resources are listed on this website. The Assistant Attorney General for Open Government, Nancy Creer, is also available to provide information about the Open Public Meetings Act.
Okay, admittedly, that's big picture, but it was it's the training that gets you the four-year checkoff box. So, and it's a quick, 16 minutes, it's a quick overview of all the things. Now, if you'll go to the PowerPoint in item 12, this is also produced by the by Nancy Creer, the open government person. And I wanted to talk about just a couple of the slides. So, you know, you're fortunate that you have Tammy and the director's staff. They do most of the work that you know, gets this all done. The agendas, the scheduling, the determination, regular meetings, special meetings, setting up the meetings. So because you, you know, employ that staff, it gets it done and you're in compliance. There are a couple things, though, that I wanted to talk about. And if you look at page 3, the middle slide is the definition of governing body. And the couple things that I thought we might really talk about here is the liability issues, just a reminder of sort of the what happens if we don't comply, and committees and email. And so the definition of governing body, all meetings of the governing body of a public agency, and this is multi-member boards and commissions. That's who this applies to. It doesn't apply to a single head executive like the director or the director of ecology, stuff like that. So if you look at the bottom slide on that page 3, what is a governing body? A governing body, so back to the middle one. All meetings of a governing body of the public agency shall be open to the public. So that's the standard you got to hit. So this governing body is an important definition. It's the multi-member board or other policy rulemaking body. So it's all of you when you're together, or it's a committee of you when the committee acts on behalf of the governing body. So that's the delegation thing we talk about sometimes. Conducts hearings or takes public testimony or public comment.
Brad has a question.
This just surfaced with the ADA Advisory Committee, in which Joe gave a ruling. Because one of the members thought broadly of the Open Meetings Act and was inviting the world, you know, to it. Cindy contacted Joe and worked, and they said, no, it did not apply.
Yeah, if you look at that, so in that bottom slide on page 3, what is a governing body? The multi-member board or other policy or rulemaking body. That's not the exact definition in the statute. But right after this act was passed, the Attorney General wrote an official Attorney General opinion, which is is the law to us, and courts aren't bound by them, but they take them with great deference. And so it's a statement of the law as to state that state agencies are sort of bound to comply with. And at that time, they decided that this term other policy or rulemaking body, that characterization covered all the prior terms. And so they came, the opinion says that if you're going down the definitions, multi-member board or commission created by statute, which would start to get you into the open public meeting, the opinion said if the body, the multi-member board, doesn't have policy or rulemaking authority, then they get out. And so that was Joe's opinion, yeah. And he referenced the big one. So you guys have policy, you have rulemaking, so you're four square in. But these advisory committees, if they're created by statute, then they are multi-member, they meet the definitions, then they get to this, and we say they don't have to comply. Now, anybody can't, they can comply, but they don't have to.
A follow-up on that, because this is going to be an open wound for a while, I think, and vis-a-vis this committee. When Joe's ruling came out from the opinion, it was then interpreted by a member or two on the ADA committee, well, the essence of the law does not apply, but the spirit of the law does. Which, again, invite everybody. Y'all come. You know, and I felt in a corner about that because, you know, spirit, essence, you know. So how do you respond to something like that?
Well, we can talk more about sort of, I mean, I think there's options, you know, and we can talk more about the specific case there and figure out who should sort of, who's going to make the decision.
I just think this could apply to other advisory bodies as well, you know, but I'll talk.
Right. And to get into the beginning definitions, it's multi-member board created by statute or something else, but it's not something that, for instance, the many advisory committees that the director creates, you just don't start in the definition there. So they're all out. So it's these ones created by statute or that you create and delegate some power to. That's where we got it.
But that one was created by
statute.
Statute. So it's right. It starts in the definition, but then you get to this place where the potential is
policy making
getting out. Right.
Thank you. Yeah.
Okay. So
Jay, sorry.
So in a committee that we have on the commission, whether it be fish or wildlife, can that committee take public input?
So what there's been some
without being open.
It's not. So looking at this, what is a governing body? It hasn't, there haven't been many cases under the Open Public Meetings Act that have gone to an appellate level that have clarified some of these terms that are subject to multiple interpretations. Recently there have been a bunch of litigation, and so we're going to get some more definitions or some clarity as to some of these things. Mike Grossman has been working on a number of issues, particularly on the fisheries side, but both he and I have been talking about it, and I think we want to come to the committees and talk to the committees sort of in more detail about these things, so about committee action and sort of the different interpretations. So we'll work on that.
Okay.
But I did want to say that you know, if you have... In that last one on three, what is a governing body? If you're less than a quorum, you don't have delegated authority from the bigger body, you're not conducting hearing, you're not taking testimony or public comment, and those terms aren't defined. So we don't know exactly what they mean. But if you're not doing those things, then you're not a governing body, and then your meetings are not a governing body, and so they're outside of the act. So they're not. So these committee meetings, you know, the straightforward meat and potatoes committee meetings, are not covered by the act as long as you don't do these things.
That's
but we'll talk more about it.
If you invite any public testimony,
so let's go to the next page at the top one. That's the one Nancy talked about. What is a meeting? And, you know, you have regular meetings where you're all at. We have special meetings where we call them where you're all at. We have the conference calls, which are under the act. We treat them under the act. But these email deals, you know, it is appropriate for the director to send you an email saying, all of you, you know, here's what's going on, da-da-da-da-da-da-da. And any one of you can respond to the director, and that's all fine. Those are public records under the Public Records Act, but they don't trigger the Open Public Meetings Act when you're just receiving mail, you know, and one of you is responding to the director. But if you start to email each other, and you know, Commissioner Kehoe sends an email to three of you, and then you send it on to the others, and then you reply or you reply all to each other, that's where. You know, even though it's not instantaneous, it has been found to be a meeting. And so that email stuff, we really want to be careful about that. And so you can receive emails from any one person. It's just the replying thing. You know, you can reply to staff, but if you reply to each other, you know, any two of you can talk, but it's when it starts to get to all of you. So that's what that is. Be aware. Let's go to the last page 9, the top one, penalties. So if you knowingly violate the act and you get challenged, potentially you could be subject to a $100 personal penalty. And I don't think there's been a lot of litigation about what this personal thing means, but I think it means it doesn't come out of the general or the director's money. It's personal to you. But it $100. There haven't been a lot of litigation about that. But there has been more and more litigation under the Open Public Meetings Act. And in addition, the court can award costs and attorney's fees. And there is getting to be sort of a boutique practice of suing in order to get attorney's fees. And if you think about a tort case, you know, where the department, let's say it's a car crash and the departments end up liable, well, it comes out of this fund of money called the Torts Revolving Fund, which is an insurance-type fund created by the state, and the department pays premiums. So that's money he's already put away. But attorney's fees under open government laws, public records, and OPMA, if there's an attorney's fees award, it comes out of budget money. And if it's $100,000, $200,000, I mean, it quickly becomes real money. So to me, that is where, you know, there is more interest in people who are getting these attorney's fees in saying, wow, this is, you know, sort of a lucrative business. So let's go back to the first page, the bottom one. When the legislature passed this, they created this really flowery paragraph that is the preface to this act. And they just quoted three of the sentences here, but the people do not yield their sovereignty to the agencies which serve them. The people in delegating authority do not give public servants the right to decide what is good for the people to know and what is not good for them to know. The people insist on remaining informed so they may retain control over instruments they've created. Courts cite this in the first paragraph. This is the standard, you know, and so what it basically says is very little you do is so important or is of a nature that the public can't see. Everything you do, you know, I mean, that's the way these cases begin. And the act goes on to say exceptions to this openness. Openness is the general and absolute rule, and exceptions are few and narrowly construed. So that's why we're so careful in the executive sessions. You know, and so between that and the attorney's fees, it quickly. And the last point is, you know, you have some constituents who, particularly in public records, are what we call frequent flyers. They often file public records requests. Well, other agencies, particularly some local government agencies, they have frequent flyers who are used to litigating stuff. And so in addition to every public records request or every open government complaint or little c complaint, they litigate them. And you don't have that experience yet. And so it's, you know, so because I think you spend a lot of time at high standards, but it's just another reminder that it is a much more complicated world, you know, when you cross those people. So that concludes my presentation.
Great. Thanks, Bill. Other questions?
I have one question.
Yep. Go ahead.
When there's litigation against the department, which has happened recently, if it's settled in court, the department has to pay for it. If it goes to full litigation or if it goes to court and they lose in court or they win in court, where does that come from? Does that come from the department as well, or does that come from some other fund?
Can you color one of these cases? It's a open. Let's say it's a public records case.
Yeah.
Okay, and we aren't able to settle it. We go to court, and the state loses.
Yeah.
Then penalties and attorney's fees come out of existing money.
So whether it's settled or you lose the court case, it still comes up. Both of them come out of.
Right. Unless it's so big, or unless they say we just don't have it, and we have to go across the street. There have been some of the huge DSHS cases where, you know, they just can't deal with it, and so they get special things I don't know very much about. But for the most part, I think it comes out of existing money. And it unless you settle it and say we'll pay, you know, some this budget period and some next budget period. You know, I think it's due when it's due. So,
okay, Director Anderson.
I had one question. Commission's been careful about how they've set up their committees to ensure that there isn't a quorum on those committees. But a lot of times those committees, or sometimes they'll bring recommendations forward, like the Fish Committee did today. There wasn't a formal commission vote in terms of acceptance of the committee's recommendations. Is that a fine point that we should be paying attention to in terms of when a committee brings a report that includes recommendations on a particular, how to proceed on a particular policy issue? Should the commission be thinking about accepting that in an official way with a vote, or does it matter?
I don't think under the Open Public Meetings Act it matters.
Okay.
I think the distinction is, you know, if the commission delegates to a committee to do something, then they're empowered and the act follows that. And so there's some where it's an official delegation, but if the committee acted like it had delegated authority, I mean, started making decisions, and, you know, your committees come as recommendations, and so they're not decisions the committee makes. But if the committee was to make a decision, whether it's delegated or not, it may look like, you know, hey, you acted, you took action, and so that is something we want to be very cognizant about. So I think the committee, that's why I think we want to come to the committees and sort of talk about some of the cases that have happened and you know, just remind people about some of these terms that haven't been defined, but it's like make you aware of sort of what these terms are so that we're really as skookum as we can on the committees.
Good. Anything else? Great. So what about ethics and public disclosure training? We scheduled that in. I think we need refresher courses on that to you,
sure,
for everyone.
Sure. I think the record retention and public records, Joe's really good at that. He's on some agency-wide task force, in fact, maybe even greater than internal to our agency. Joe was telling me about state task force. The record retention, public disclosure stuff is just exploding. I think the department has some new staff, and so maybe a group discussion about that.
Okay.
Is a good thing. And ethics you can do. You know, we were sort of waiting to see whether you'd get a ninth member.
Yeah.
And,
you did give the training to the newest newbies.
Right. Yeah.
And, yeah. But it's always good for the whole commission to hear it again and again. Every year, I would suggest everyone get the refresher.
Yeah,
better
especially
stay out of trouble.
Yeah, the records, I mean, with the volume of emails, you know, that Tammy sends and we all send, you know, I put them all in a folder, but I would like some clarification as to what I can delete.
Yeah, I think records retention and public records disclosure, those two things are just becoming more and more important. And while there's lots of cases on OPMA, I mean, there's many, many cases on records.
Okay. Commissioner Holtzman?
In that vein, I guess this question is posed to Tammy. Most or all the emails you send to us, you retain? Okay. So, I mean, personally, we can go through, if it's on something, we can delete it and be fine, right?
Right.
Okay.
Unless it's a litigation hold. Unless we do one of those things where, you know, and when I think the commission was initially sued, for instance, in the tribal hunting case, and you get those litigation hold notices that say, for the following things, don't delete anything. Hold on to everything until we sort through it. And that's because the federal courts have been so strict in these worst case facts where some of the big corporations, you know, are just shredding their computers and documents when they get sued. And the courts have bounced back and said, no, you can't. With this electronic information, you can't destroy it once you get sued. So we've been very proactive about saying when we send you a litigation hold and it says litigation hold, it talks about the case, the types of things to save, and save them until further notice. And we try to be really clear about turning them on as quick as we can and then turning them off as soon as is appropriate. Okay?
Great. Thanks.
Great.